Good evening, everybody. Great to see you all here again. Seems like for a while, Wednesday night was kind of getting the crummy weather, but we had a little bit of a break this week, so it's exciting to be outside and actually enjoy it. Seems like our Wednesdays have been a little rough that way lately. So glad you all decided to join us here tonight as we study through the book of Joshua. So we find ourselves here tonight in Joshua chapter 3 is where we're going to be picking up. But before we get into that, as I was studying for this week, I was looking at just the different themes I noticed in this passage of Scripture, different things that come up, and just lessons we can take away from that. And as I was doing that, I saw a lot about confidence in God, confidence in His work, confidence for the future. And so I hopped on my computer and did a quick web search. I typed in fear of the future. That was kind of the opposite of what we're seeing in this passage here. And it got a lot of different hits. I mean, you go through that and there's, you know, all these different websites explaining how to deal with fears about the future, how to you know, move through your fears of the future, how to combat fears about the future, fears of the unknown, all sorts of different things. So I learned in this search that there's a term for this. Chronophobia is a recognized phobia. Fear of the passage of time is really what it's centered around. People think about just time going on, and it's almost difficult for them to live in the present, people who have this phobia, because it's slipping away so quickly. Just thinking about the moment that we're in right now and the fact that it will be gone forever, never to come back in just a few seconds, is enough to send these people into full-blown panic attacks. That they just cannot cope with this. And I'm doubting anyone here tonight has that. Maybe someone does, I don't know. But there's certainly a lot that we can be afraid of, especially with regards to the future and with the unknown. For us coming out of what we've lived through this past year is one of the most feared health issues to arise in our generation. There's constantly new fears around the world, fears about politics, fears about health, fears about personal concerns, fears about war, different things going on all around us that can bombard us and cause us to doubt our ability to move forward in life, to question what's coming for us down the road, to fear what we don't know, that there's so much out there coming up that we just do not have control over and don't understand. And so it's easy to be driven to fear, and we see that all around us in the world, that there's so many people who live lives marked by fear, that the world around us has no place to anchor themselves. And so oftentimes fear becomes the defining characteristic. And for us as Christians, fortunately, this is not how we have to live. And that's what we're going to be talking about a fair bit as we study through this passage tonight. So our focus point this evening, kind of what we're going to drill on and see illustrated through this, is that we can be confident in the future because of what God has already done in the past. And this is a concept we see repeated throughout the Scriptures as a whole, especially as we studied through the Old Testament. We see so much of what we just finished in the book of Deuteronomy, God urging His people to be faithful to Him, to live faithful lives to Him because of what God had done for them. And we're going to see a lot of that same point come across here tonight, that the people of Israel can be confident as they move forward. They go in to conquer the promised land because of the God who was with them and what that God had done on their behalf in the past. So a little context for us as we get into this, picking up in Joshua chapter 3, as I said. So the early stages of the book of Joshua. So Tom started us off with Joshua chapter 1, kind of just explaining the transition in leadership that Moses had led the people of Israel out of Egypt through their years of wandering in the wilderness to the very edge of the promised land. And because of his disobedience, he was denied that request to enter into the promised land. So Joshua was commissioned as the new leader to lead the people of Israel into Canaan, to go in and conquer the land, to drive out the people living there, and to take hold of this promise that God had given his people so long before. And so Joshua chapter 1 introduces that. In Joshua chapter 2 last week, we saw the story of Rahab, the prostitute living in the land of, in the city of Jericho, who saw what God had done, who had heard stories of his might and his wonder, who, by God's providence, had this meeting with the spies Joshua had sent out to spy out the land, to prepare for their invasion. And she wanted to move to their side. She realized that she was on the wrong side of a holy God. And so she stepped out in faith to protect them, to aid them, and to join the people of Israel in obedience to the Lord. And so we saw the spies return from scouting out the land of Jericho safely through the help of Rahab, and they bring back their report to Joshua that the whole land is afraid of them, that people have heard what God has been doing through this people, and they are afraid because they know that they cannot stand against this God. And so that's where we find ourselves, that the people of Israel are preparing these final preparations before they actually enter into the promised land, to go in and really to see God fulfill this promise that they've been waiting so long to see. So Joshua chapter 3, starting in verse 1. Then Joshua rose early in the morning, and they set out from Shittim, and they came to the Jordan, he and all the people of Israel, and lodged there before they passed over. At the end of 3 days, the officers went through the camp and commanded the people, "As soon as you see the Ark of the Covenant of the Lord your God being carried by the Levitical priests, then you shall set out from your place and follow it. Yet there shall be a distance between you and it about 2,000 cubits in length. Do not come near it in order that you may know the way you shall go, for you have not passed this way before." Then Joshua said to the people, "Consecrate yourselves, for tomorrow the Lord will do wonders among you." And Joshua said to the priests, "Take up the Ark of the Covenant and pass on before the people." So they took up the Ark of the Covenant and went before the people. So the people of Israel are camped out. So we think about, if you've ever seen a map of Israel. So it's kind of this long, narrow strip of land. It's got the ocean on one side, desert on the other side. And the Jordan River is really a very major divider here. So you think about the Sea of Galilee, where you see so much about the life of Jesus, here in the north. And then you've got the Dead Sea at the southern end, and you've got the Jordan River connecting the two. So the people of Israel are camped out on the far side of the river, and they're preparing to go cross over this river into the land to conquer it. And so that's the first obstacle facing them, that they have to get across this river before they can go in there. And so we note a few interesting things as we read through this, as they're making their preparations. Joshua tells them that they're going to be led by the Ark of the Covenant. As we read through our previous books of the Old Testament, we see the Ark was, you know, a special, special thing where God made his presence known, that they set this up inside the tabernacle, and this is where God's presence dwelled when they were encamped. And so the people were following the priests, carrying the Ark, and they're told that they should follow it a little ways behind, at something of a distance. In verse 4, he says that they should not come near it in order that you may know the way you shall go, for you have not passed this way before. So this is a new experience in many ways for this generation of the Israelites, that God had led them out of Egypt, parted the Red Sea, into the wilderness, camped at Mount Sinai, given the law, and then he takes them to the promised land. They rebel against him, say that they cannot go in and conquer the land. They're not strong enough. The people are too mighty. They lose their faith in God's ability there. And because of that, they're punished by wandering in the desert for 40 years, while all of the people who were adults of that entire generation at that time that had turned back from the promised land died off in the wilderness. And so the people who are going in here now that are preparing to enter into the promised land is the next generation. It's the children of those who had originally been led out of Egypt. And so a lot of them probably weren't even alive when some of these first events happened. And they'd been wandering in this general area of the wilderness outside the promised land for 40 years. And we don't know exactly where they went, how far they traveled, but it sounds like they covered a lot of the same territory. They were kind of just meandering around, letting their flocks and their herds graze and kind of just waiting, essentially, for the last of this generation to die so that God would give them another chance, give this new generation their opportunity to go into the land. So they're now entering into something, into a place they haven't gone before, that God is bringing them somewhere new, somewhere they haven't seen. And this had to be exciting for them, that they're taking these first steps into new territory, into a place that they hadn't seen. And so Joshua's instructions for them as they're preparing to go into this new area, in verse 5 he says, to consecrate yourselves, for tomorrow the Lord will do wonders among you. So as we're preparing to enter into this new area, to follow God's leading, that they're very literally following God, not knowing exactly where they're going, what the paths looked like, or where this place was. That Joshua's instruction to them as they do this is to consecrate themselves, to set themselves aside in holiness, to prepare their hearts and their minds, to walk in obedience to God, and to see God do great things. And so if they're to go in to this new area, if they're to step out to places they've never been before, they must do so in faith and in obedience to God. That's so much what we see in the book of Joshua. That's where we get our theme, is that victory is given to the people through obedience, that their obedience to God helps them to live the life God desires for them. And we see that when they disobey, that they're punished, that they don't get to receive the full blessing God has in mind for them. That walking in obedience and worship to God is the best way to move forward into what he has called Israel to, into what he has called us to. That in much the same way, if we're to go into new areas, if we're to continue moving forward where God has called us, we have to do so in obedience and in worship. We have to set aside our hearts and our minds in a special way for the God who has called us. Verse 7, the Lord said to Joshua, today I will begin to exalt you in the sight of all Israel, that they may know that as I was with Moses, so I will be with you. And as for you, command the priests who bear the Ark of the Covenant. When you come to the brink of the waters of the Jordan, you shall stand still in the Jordan. And Joshua said to the people of Israel, come here and listen to the words of the Lord your God. And Joshua said, here is how you shall know that the living God is among you, and that he will without fail drive out from before you the Canaanites, the Hittites, the Hivites, the Perizzites, the Girgashites, the Amorites, and the Jebusites. Behold, the Ark of the Covenant of the Lord of all the earth is passing over before you into the Jordan. Now therefore take 12 men from the tribes of Israel, from each tribe a man. And when the soles of the feet of the priests bearing the Ark of the Lord of all the earth, shall rest in the waters of the Jordan, the waters of the Jordan shall be cut off from flowing, and the waters coming down from above shall stand in one heap. And so we see God give the specific instructions in these verses of what's going to happen here, how this is going to work. He starts off just kind of really reminding Joshua, reminding the people that Joshua is his chosen leader, that Joshua has a special role to fill. We'll talk a little bit more about that later in this passage. So he encourages Joshua in this, and then Joshua passes on the word of God to the people. In verse 10, he says, here is how you shall know that the living God is among you. That he's telling the people of Israel, here is how you can tell that God is with us, that God is going to be faithful to do as he's promised, that he will be faithful to fight on our behalf, to drive out the people living in this land, to give us the land that he has promised and to be with us. They'll be able to know that God is with us, it says, because they're going to send the Ark of the Covenant out into the river, and God is going to stop the water so they can go across on dry ground. Much the same way that he did with the parting of the Red Sea, they're told. And so Joshua is told to send the ark out in front of them, to choose a representative from each of the 12 tribes of Israel to go forward with them, and that God is going to stop the flow of this great river in order to bring them into this land. It's kind of an interesting promise that the people of Israel had seen God work and act in so many different ways, that God was still providing daily for them manna from heaven to sustain them, that God had defeated their enemies in the past, that God had provided miraculously for their sustenance. And they, in case that didn't hit home, he's giving them just another reminder here that this is how you can know that God is with you, that God is going to perform this great miracle, this great sign that will make it unmistakable that God is on your side. And I'm not sure how much consolation that was for that initial group going out into the river. One of the places I was reading was saying that the early flood season, the time of year when they were at here, that the Jordan River swelled to where it overflowed the banks and was roughly a mile across. So there's a lot of water coming through here. And these guys are told to step out into this, trusting God that he is going to stop the flow of this mighty river and be faithful to bring his people into the land. And so often we see promises that we can trust in of God's faithfulness in the scriptures, that the people of Israel and us are able to move forward in our life because we can be reminded of who God is and what God has done for us. That we see God working all around us. We have seen God working all around us. But oftentimes, we forget to look for it. We forget to remind ourselves, to remember of the work God has done on our behalf. I had a visit with a gal in the church earlier today, just talking about some different things, asking for prayer for some challenges she had in her life. But I loved her attitude she had dealing with all these things. She was just so happy sharing with me about all the ways she had seen God work through just the little things in life, things that were seemingly mundane, that to her, because she was alert for it, because she was looking for it, she saw the love God had for her in just these little things that happen throughout life. That God is with us, that God is working around us, and if we can be attentive to that, if we're looking to see what God is doing, that he is there, that we can see that and we can take heart in that, being reminded of who God is and what God does on behalf of his people. Verse 14. So when the people set out from their tents to pass over the Jordan, with the priests bearing the Ark of the Covenant before the people, and as soon as those bearing the Ark had come as far as the Jordan, and the feet of the priests bearing the Ark were dipped in the brink of the water, now the Jordan overflows all its banks throughout the time of harvest. The waters coming down from above stood and rose up in a heap very far away at Adam, the city that is beside Zarethan. And those flowing down toward the Sea of the Arabah, the Salt Sea, were completely cut off. And the people passed over opposite Jericho. Now the priests bearing the Ark of the Covenant of the Lord stood firmly on dry ground in the midst of the Jordan. And all Israel was passing over on dry ground until all the nation finished passing over the Jordan. So again, we see this is a very similar miracle to what God performed with Moses in the parting of the Red Sea. That the people are facing a natural obstacle to where God is leading them. There's this barrier in the way that apart from God would seem insurmountable. That there is no way they could have dealt with this without God stepping in and acting on their behalf. And so God does just that, to remind them who he is, how powerful he is, and that he is with them. God sets up this situation to remind the people of Israel that he is their God, to build their faith, to strengthen and encourage them before they go in for this conquest, and probably to strike fear into their enemies as well. They had heard of the parting of the Red Sea already. They had heard about how God had battled the enemies of Israel for them and how they had been unstoppable because of the God who was with them. And now, undoubtedly, they would hear again about how God had performed a very similar miracle on behalf of his people to lead them to where he wanted them to be. God is faithful to bring people where he wills them. They just have to follow him, to trust him, and to know that he is faithful and he is able to do what seems impossible to mankind. That obstacles that are insurmountable apart from God can be dealt with so quickly through the power and the work of the Lord. And we'll pick up here in chapter 4, verse 1. When all the nation had finished passing over the Jordan, the Lord said to Joshua, "Take 12 men from the people, from each tribe a man, and command them, saying, 'Take 12 stones from here out of the midst of the Jordan, from the very place where the priest's feet stood firmly, and bring them over with you, and lay them down in the place where you lodge tonight.'" Then Joshua called the 12 men from the people of Israel, whom he had appointed, a man from each tribe. And Joshua said to them, "Pass on before the ark of the Lord your God into the midst of the Jordan, and take up each of you a stone upon his shoulder, according to the number of the tribes of the people of Israel, that this may be a sign among you. When your children ask in time to come, 'What do these stones mean to you?' then you shall tell them that the waters of the Jordan were cut off before the ark of the covenant of the Lord, when it passed over the Jordan. The waters of the Jordan were cut off. So these stones shall be to the people of Israel a memorial forever." And so Joshua gives them further instructions as this is going on. The priests are standing, holding the Ark of the Covenant in the middle of what was the river. The whole nation is, you know, gradually making their way across this dried riverbed. And he has these 12 representatives, one from each of the tribes of Israel, go and take a stone out of the river and bring it across to where they were setting up their new camp on the opposite side. And so he's telling them to take these stones, to stack them up, to build a monument or a memorial so that they will remember this great miracle that God had performed on their behalf. And it says in verse 6 that this could be a sign among them, that when their children ask what these stones mean, that they can tell them what God had done, what had happened. And then he reinforces that again in verse 7, that these stones shall be to the people of Israel a memorial forever. And I think it's important for us, as much as for the people of Israel, to remember what God has done. We see this same concept in a number of places in the Old Testament. If you think of out in front of the building, we have that stone standing upright in the sidewalk with a verse next to it, talking about a battle that God gave the Israelites victory in. And he tells them to raise a stone of remembrance, to call it Ebenezer. That's what that's for. We see that repeated in hymns and different things. That God wants people to remember what he has done for them. That it's important to not forget the work of the Lord. And I think a lot of the time in the moment, we see God act. We see God do great things. And it's unmistakable to us in the moment that we're standing back and we're going, "Wow, that was amazing. Nobody could do that but God." And we're humbled and we're awed knowing that we have seen God work. But we get months and years and decades down the road. And sometimes we forget what it was like to be in that moment. We forget how obvious the work of God was when it was right before us. And we forget what God has called us to, how God has called us to live. And so it's important to have reminders, to continually be reminding ourselves of the work God has done around us, the work God has done in us, and the work God is continuing to do. The people of Israel needed these reminders so much. After we finish Joshua, we're going to continue on into the book of Judges. And Judges, and really so much of the Old Testament narrative, is an exposition of the heart of mankind. That we see problems come up, and we're not all that different from them. And we see the people of Israel forget what God has done in the book of Judges, forget what God brought them through, and even forget God entirely, that they go to worship false gods, and they suffer because of their disobedience. And then God sends someone to rescue them, to bring them back, deliver them from their enemies, and help them walk in obedience to him. And they do that for a while, and then they forget again and go back to worshiping false gods. That it's so important to remember what God has done in order to continue to walk in obedience and not turn away from him and from what he has called us to. Verse 8, chapter 4, verse 8. And the people of Israel did just as Joshua commanded, and took up 12 stones out of the midst of the Jordan, according to the number of the tribes of the people of Israel, just as the Lord told Joshua. And they carried them over with them to the place where they lodged, and laid them down there. And Joshua set up 12 stones in the midst of the Jordan, in the place where the feet of the priests bearing the Ark of the Covenant had stood. And they are there to this day. For the priests bearing the ark stood in the midst of the Jordan until everything was finished that the Lord commanded Joshua to tell the people, according to all that Moses had commanded Joshua. So God carries out this promise to them, that he performs this great miracle, that he tells them to build a memorial to remember the work he had done, and that he finishes bringing the rest of the people over the river into the very edge of the promised land, that God had followed through on this promise, that he had protected his people and miraculously brought them where he was leading them. Continues on in verse 10, the people passed over in haste. And when all the people had finished passing over, the ark of the Lord and the priests passed over before the people. The sons of Reuben, the sons of Gad, and the half-tribe of Manasseh passed over armed before the people of Israel, as Moses had told them. About 40,000 ready for war passed over before the Lord for battle to the plains of Jericho. On that day the Lord exalted Joshua in the sight of all Israel, and they stood in awe of him, just as they had stood in awe of Moses all the days of his life. One of the interesting things with the book of Joshua is that Israel has this new leader. So far, as we study through the Old Testament, so much of the narrative of the nation of Israel centers around Moses as the leader of the people. That we see God call Moses for the special task of delivering Israel from slavery in Egypt. We see Moses reluctantly agree to this at first. We see God build Moses into a great leader, use Moses to perform many great miracles, to lead this people in such a great way that we saw Moses do so much for this nation. And Joshua transitions over from Moses to this new leader. And I'm sure a lot of the people had to wonder how things would go without Moses, that Moses was the man who spoke face to face with God, as no prophet had before or since, we were told. That they had lost this leader, and Joshua was commissioned as the new one. And we see right here that God carries through on the promise he made earlier, that he would exalt Joshua, it says in verse 14, in the sight of all Israel, that the people stood in awe of him, just as they had stood in awe of Moses. God exalted Joshua. It's interesting to think about how it is that we view leaders and leadership. That there's so many different thoughts and ideas about that. That leadership is so much of a buzzword in the society and culture we live in the business world. That there's conferences and seminars you can go to learn more about leadership, to become a better leader, to grow as a leader. But a lot of the time, God's view of leadership is not the same as the world's. We see here that Joshua was exalted by the Lord, that Joshua was the leader because he was chosen by God, not necessarily because he appeared the way a leader should or he acted like a leader should, that Joshua was faithful to the Lord. And we see a lot of things we can learn from the example of Joshua, that Joshua was someone who stood fast in the truth, that Joshua stayed close to God. We see Joshua being gradually trained up by Moses, that he was Moses' assistant for a long time through their wanderings in the wilderness. And we see God preparing Joshua for this time where he would be exalted, where the people would stand in awe of Joshua because he was the leader God had chosen, that God would equip him, that God would use him for his glory. It reminds me of Matthew chapter 23, verse 12. Jesus tells us that whoever exalts himself will be humbled. Whoever humbles himself will be exalted. That Joshua was not exalting himself, that he was being exalted by the Lord. And because of this, he would be the leader that the nation needed. That because of his obedience to God, his faithfulness to God, his humility even before God, that he was the one who would lead the nation of Israel into the land of Canaan. And so we have to ask ourselves, who are we following? What do we look for in a leader? That God has called us to walk in obedience to him, and he places leaders in our lives to set an example for that. And the leaders we look to, the leaders we desire to emulate and to follow should be godly leaders, should be humble, should be those who are faithful to the Lord and who value him and his word more than anything else, who are willing to set aside their own power and glory in order to honor God and to lead people to do the same. Verse 15, and the Lord said to Joshua, command the priests bearing the Ark of the Testimony to come up out of the Jordan. So Joshua commanded the priests, come up out of the Jordan. And when the priests bearing the Ark of the Covenant of the Lord came up from the midst of the Jordan, and the soles of the priests' feet were lifted up on dry ground, the waters of the Jordan returned to their place and overflowed all its banks as before. The people came up out of the Jordan on the 10th day of the first month, and they encamped at Gilgal on the east border of Jericho. And those 12 stones which they took out of the Jordan, Joshua set up at Gilgal. And he said to the people of Israel, when your children ask their fathers in times to come, what do these stones mean? Then you shall let your children know, Israel passed over this Jordan on dry ground. For the Lord your God dried up the waters of the Jordan for you until you passed over, as the Lord your God did to the Red Sea, which he dried up for us until we passed over, so that all the peoples of the earth may know that the hand of the Lord is mighty, that you may fear the Lord your God forever. And so we see the conclusion of this miracle, that the people pass through the river, the priests come up out of the river, that Joshua and the men take these 12 stones to their camp to build this memorial, and the waters come back, the river begins to flow again. I think in some ways this kind of bookends a period of time for the nation of Israel, that God led them out of Egypt with the parting of the Red Sea, and they were in transition, in transit, wandering the wilderness, waiting to arrive in Canaan, in the Promised Land. And now, in much the same way as they left Egypt, God parts another great body of water, leads the people through it, and allows it to close behind them, to end this time of wandering. That God's people were preparing to enter into the promised land, and they had entered into a new stage of life, a new phase of their existence as a nation, under a new leader, living a new lifestyle, and with a new mission to go in and to conquer the land, to take hold of the promises that God had given them. And these verses here give us just a little bit more explanation about the purposes behind all of this too. That it kind of repeats some of those same concepts. In verse 21, that when the children ask their fathers in times to come, what do these stones mean? What is the purpose of this memorial? That they can tell them about God parting the Jordan River, about God leading them into this new place, into this new land, into this new life. And he goes on to explain further why he did all this. In verse 24, it tells them that God dried up the river, dried up the Red Sea, so that they could pass over, so that all the peoples of the earth may know that the hand of the Lord is mighty. And secondly, that you may fear the Lord your God forever. And so the purpose of these miraculous events was so that the peoples of the world could hear of the Lord, could know that he is mighty, that he is powerful, that he alone is God, that there is none like him. And secondly, that Israel would fear the Lord forever, that God performed these great actions to display his glory to the world, to help the world see who he is, and to help his people walk in obedience to him, that they would see his power and his greatness and be reminded of the folly of turning away from God. We think about just what that looks like, why God did that. I'm reminded of a conversation I had in college one time. I was talking to a gal I knew, which in and of itself maybe have been considered a miracle at that time given my social skills. But I remember talking to her, and I was somehow it came up. I can't remember if I was trying to find her house or something. She said something about her sassy little economy car. It was how she described this little beat-up Nissan that she had. And I just remember thinking to myself, I feel like sassy is the last character quality I want in an automobile. I mean, I want to jump in the car, and I want to turn the key, and I don't want the car giving me any lip. I want to know that it's going to crank over, it's going to fire up, and it's going to go where I point it and do what I want it to do at the speeds I want it to go and stop when I tell it, all these things. When we think about, how do you build confidence in something like this? It comes through seeing it work, that I knew my car, at least the vast majority of the time, was going to start, was going to run, was going to go when I said go and stop when I wanted it to stop, because hundreds, thousands of times I had done that. I had hopped into the seat, turned the key over, put it in gear, and started driving. And so I had seen this car work over and over, and I knew that I could have confidence in this car for the future because the car had worked for me so consistently in the past. And I have many opinions about cars if you want to hear about that later. But the point is, I had confidence in my vehicle because of my prior experience with that vehicle. And in much the same way, God is telling his people that they can have confidence in him moving forward because of their experience with him in the past. That God performed these great miracles on behalf of his people to display his glory to the world, to fulfill his mission, to bring himself glory, to redeem a people for himself, for his worship, and to remind them that he was with them, that he would continue to be faithful to them just as he had been faithful to them in the past. So for our New Testament connection this evening, Romans chapter 8 tells us, "What then shall we say to these things? If God is for us, who can be against us? He who did not spare his own son, but gave him up for us all, how will he not also with him graciously give us all things?" And so just like the people of Israel, we have seen God's faithfulness, that we have experienced the love and power of God in saving us and drawing us to himself. His blessing when we walk in obedience. We've seen his provision for us. But more importantly, we have seen the sacrifice God has made on our behalf. That if God himself would not even hold back his own son, but was willing to send Jesus to die in our place, to take the penalty of our sins so that we could be made right with him. If God was willing to do all that, then how could we not trust him moving forward? If that same God who sent his son to die for us has promised to be with us, how great a confidence should we have as we face challenges, as we face obstacles, and as we face fears in life? We can deal with all these things knowing that God is with us. That doesn't mean it'll always be easy. That doesn't mean there won't be challenges, that we won't have doubts, that we won't have fears at times. In the first chapter of Joshua, God commands the people to be strong and courageous, but not to just be strong and courageous of their own strength, to be strong and courageous, for the Lord your God is with you wherever you go. And so we can take heart in that same message, that whatever arises, whatever comes up in our lives, that we can be strong and courageous, we can have confidence, we can have hope and peace, because we know that God is with us wherever we go. Let's go to him in prayer. Thank you, Father, for your love. I thank you for your faithfulness, God. I thank you for the message, the recording we see right here in your word of your faithfulness to your people, God. I thank you that you have made a way for us to be right before you, Lord, that you sent your son out of the great love you had for us. And I thank you that because of that, we can be confident, God, knowing that you will give us what we need for every situation, Lord, that you will carry us through any obstacle, any difficulty, any challenge we face, because you care, because you're with us, because you have promised to fulfill the purpose you have for our lives, God. I pray that you'd help us to be confident, to rise in the face of fear, and to know that you are with us, Lord. I pray that you would continue to guide us, to bless us, and to use us for your glory as we go from here. We ask these things in your name.